morning. We're just about to resume after a few-week break. And we'll be continuing with Koheles today. And we'll start just about 2 or 3 minutes, wait for everybody to call in. And once you hear the audio, just type audio OK at the bottom of the screen. That'll confirm that you're picking up the audio properly. Again, we'll be in chapter 3 of Koheles. That's Ecclesiastes. And today I think we'll be taking just a slight detour, staying with the Koheles, but addressing a Medrash that was a question to us over the weekend. And again, we'll start momentarily, and as soon as you hear the audio, just type audio okay to confirm that the audio is coming through all right. And we'll just start in just a few moments. Okay, Laura, thanks for the audio confirmation. Doug, Kyle, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning. Jim, is that you?
That is me.
Oh, welcome.
Okay.
I'm well. How are you?
Well, my wife's in Iraq, and so I'm only about as well as you can do when your wife's at war.
Yeah, I can appreciate it. Well, no, I can't appreciate that. I've never been in that situation, but I can try to appreciate it. I hope it all comes out well.
Well, I did last time.
How's everybody doing? It's been a while.
Pretty good, Rabbi. How are you feeling?
Good. Back to myself. Just relocated, you know, within town. New home, first time moved in about 14 years.
Wow.
It's pretty much done, so, you know, that's what got me through a lot of the heavy lifting, was just knowing in a week or 2 weeks from now it'll all be done. You know, thank God all worked out.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, my back is not hurting.
Yeah, I can appreciate that one.
That one you can appreciate. And,
well, yeah, the last time, back, one of the times when we moved, a UPS driver showed up delivering a package while we were loading the van, and he said, oh, you're moving. He said, I moved recently. He said, I'd rather have eye surgery than have to move again.
I would not agree with that. It's over. Once you're done, you're done. That's,
that's true.
There's something nice about, you know, new. Just, you know, a different view out the window and a new place, freshly painted. So, you know, there's certain things just aesthetically are nice.
Oh, very good. Yeah, that is fun to be in a new spot. Yeah, so I would imagine, given what you do, that moving all your electronic gear was a challenge.
No, I probably had a lot less to move than, most others have, very full houses. That really wasn't coming from a very big location, so. It's, thank God, and I had my brother to help out, and he was a real, real, real blessing to have here, because he knows everything about electronics, and lighting, and flooring, and he does home maintenance as a business, so all the little things that needed to be addressed, he was able to do right there on the spot. So it was very, very, installing air conditioning units, the windows, all these different things you have to know how to do. So it's really worked out well, so thank God.
Yeah.
So it's been a little bit, we really haven't done the Jewish Times in about 3 weeks just because, you're preparing for the moment. But I hope to resume this week. And given that they had, finished up before the weekend, I saw your question about the statement you're quoting from Jack Saunders on Kohelis itself, that Medrash Rabbah. So I did time this morning to go through it, but why don't we take that up today, because it is Kohelis, and it's a question that's, on your mind right now. You had the other question, too. What was the other question again?
Oh, it was just the question about, it started with the question of Jewish people having websites that allow sales on Shabbos, and that got us thinking about the whole question of where do you draw the line. If you own stock in a company that does business on Shabbos,
right.
Somewhere between there and actually being in the shop on Shabbos, there must be a you're stepping over the line. We were curious as to where the line was.
One halakha I know is that if, let's say, you're a partnership with somebody who's not Jewish, so he can work on the Sabbath, keep the business open, and he takes all of the profit of the Sabbath. And then let's say that happens to be a very, very busy day in comparison to the 5 days during the week. So you can work out that you'll take an exchange, 2 days for the 1 day that he's working, whatever it is, but you just let him take all the work. So really there isn't any benefit that you're getting on the Sabbath. I can't answer conclusively, but that's just, I'm just want to give you some input on that. In terms of having a site, you're really not doing anything if you have a website and you sell product and it's open. People are, the question is, what are you violating if your website is doing business during that day and you're not working? So the question is really, it has to be asked, what is the violation?
Yeah.
So that has to be looked into.
Yeah.
But today we'll take up the issue of the Medrash. I found the Medrash. If you want to read it for everybody, you have the English there?
Yeah, let me just pop over to that.
Why don't you read it so everybody's up to speed, and then, then mention your questions on it, and then I'll respond.
Okay. And just 1 second while I grab that.
Good morning, Rabbi. Good morning, Doug. This is Francesca.
Good morning,
hey.
Francesca.
How you doing, Francesca? How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Good to hear.
Both going well?
Yeah, thank God. Very well.
Oh, yeah.
So, this started when we, on the No High Nations News Group, we got into a discussion about taking on other commandments, and that led to a discussion of kosher and whether Noahides should keep kosher and the question of eating pork, which always seems to be one that comes up when you get into the discussion of eating. I sometimes wonder why pork gets the major focus sometimes as opposed to other non-kosher foods, but... So, Jack Saunders posted a midrash from Midrash Rabbah, which says, the rabbis say, in the hereafter, the Holy One, blessed be He, will send forth a herald to announce, quote, whoever has not partaken of swine's flesh in his lifetime, let him come and take his reward. Unquote. And many who belong to the Gentile peoples who never partook of swine's flesh will come to receive their reward. At that time, the Holy One, blessed be He, will declare, quote, wish to be rewarded in both worlds. Not enough for them that they enjoy their world upon earth, but they also seek to enjoy the world of my children, unquote. At that time, the Holy One, blessed be He, will send forth a herald a second time to announce, whoever has not partaken of the flesh of animals which had not been ritually slaughtered, or of animals disqualified for food, or of the animals and reptiles prohibited by the Torah, let him come and receive his reward, unquote. But there were none apart from Israel, because if a Gentile had not partaken of the flesh of such animals which belonged to himself, he did so of animals which belonged to another. Hence, why is the pig called Hazir? Because it is destined to restore greatness and sovereignty to those to whom they are due.
Okay. So basically it's saying that, again, a medrash means it's a statement of the rabbis where, you know, God didn't say this evidently. The whole point of a medrash is that there's an idea or a number of ideas that the rabbis are communicating by creating an allegory, a parable of some sort, a metaphor. You know, many, many different types of a medrash. But it's something which the rabbis constructed, they wrote of their own. But it's to, it didn't really take place because evidently they can't, you know, say what God is saying, and you can't, you know, that'd be very presumptuous and arrogant to say so. But they have license to teach. That's what the rabbi's obligation is. And they want to teach truths. So they'll talk about a fictional event that will take place in the future. I mean, in the next world. It's clear. It's not talking about the days of the Messiah. It's talking about the next, the afterlife, after death. So it's, it must be clear that that's what it's talking about. And they made a statement that God is, quote-unquote, going to make an announcement that whoever on earth, Jew and Gentile alike, whoever had not partaken of swine, of pork, of any type of pig products, let him come and claim his reward. So then many of the Gentiles came. So what was God's response? He said, it's not enough that they enjoyed this world, but they want to take the next world too, that's really set aside for the Jew. It sounds like it's not a pleasant type of a statement. It's like a rejection, right? Because you see that God revamps the original announcement, and he says, this is really the announcement. The announcement is not really, it was misunderstood. So he reformulates the announcement. The first announcement was that all who come and who have not had any pig products, have not eaten the pig during life, let them come now after death and claim a reward for doing so. So evidently there was like a, you know, there's nothing unexpected to God, but let's just talk that way, because it seems that's the sense of what's happening, is that all of a sudden a number of Gentiles, the Noahites, came and to claim the reward because they abstained from eating anything that was made of pig. So God's response is odd, because he already said, if you did not eat of the pigs, so then come and get your reward. So now why is there a rejection of those people who are coming, who complied with that law? And God says, it's not enough that you had your world, but you want to have the next world too? Right? The Hebrew says, it's not enough that you ate your world. Ella, they also seek to eat, to have, to enjoy the world of my children even more, meaning the Jews. At that moment, God brought out a second herald, a second announcement, and he announced, and he said, whoever did not eat, and now he's not just talking about the pig, now he says, whoever did not eat the animals that were not slaughtered, or animals that were torn apart, I guess by a wild beast, or insects, or reptiles. So let him come and get his reward. So the rabbis say, you're not going to have anybody outside the Jews who comply with that, because if they didn't eat of their own, they certainly ate from their friend. Meaning there was no way that there was an avoidance of all non-kosher products. Maybe they avoided pig. But God reformulates the announcement. He says, no, this is what I mean to say. Whoever did not partake of any of the non-kosher animal products, let him come and get his reward. And there was none, as you said, Doug. Only the Jews won't. Okay. And then it ends off. All right. Okay, so what is this... what is this trying to tell us over here? What... I mean, there's a number of things we'll have to ask, but let me just start with your questions, Doug, because you had a number of them, so go ahead.
Yeah, so questions that came up were, in Genesis 9:3, God clearly states, you know, after Noah gets out of the ark, every moving thing shall be to you as food. So if God stated that, then clearly everything, including pigs, including non-kosher animals, should be to man as food. So how could God then turn around and later say, ah, but if you didn't partake of this or this or this, I'm going to give you a special reward? Because it seems very inconsistent, you know, to say, here, I'm going to give this to you. Oh, but if you don't partake of it, I'm going to reward you later. So that is the first question. The second question is in Deuteronomy 14:21. Very openly states in the Torah that a Jew can give meat that is not properly slaughtered to a ger, who I understand Rashi defines as a Noahide who lives in Israel.
Right.
And the text says, so that he can eat it.
Right.
So the Torah is saying, if you've got to a Jewish person, if you've got meat that's not ritually slaughtered properly, then you can give it to the ger and he can eat it. So if the Torah is saying very clearly that that's appropriate for a resident alien in Israel to eat, how then can God turn around later and say, oh, but if you didn't, I'm going to reward you? Again, it seems like a contradiction.
Right. So let's just address those questions. First of all, we know that Maimonides says that any command that a Noahide wants to take upon himself, that we do not hold them back from doing it properly. And there is definitely a benefit, as we've talked a number of times, for a Noahide to take on practically every other law except for Sabbath, holidays, tefillin, and teaching Torah, or studying Torah that's outside of his area. Other than that, he could take them on, and it definitely gets that perfection, the same perfection that the Jew would have. So that's up to him to do. So this answers the first question, that yes, God permitted to Noahide. He didn't have to keep kosher. It's not one of the laws. That's why he said to Noah when he came out of the ark that, you know, all living things are, you can eat. So that was not permitted up to that point. As Rabbi Chaim explained, it was permitted. Meat was now first permitted to Noah and not to Adam. And I believe one of the rabbis says that even by Adam, he was allowed to eat the meat only if he found it dead. But he couldn't do the act of killing the animal. After the time of Noah, now man can even kill the animal and then eat it. That was because there was a reduction in his physical stature, and meat was a requirement in order to compensate for the loss of the physical. And you see that the lives, the longevity, from that point forward, drastically decreased. They lived from 900 to 1,000 years, and then they started dropping 800, 700, 600. Times of Abraham, he was already 175 years old that he died. So you see there was a drop in longevity too. All right, so meat was permitted.
Rabbi?
Yes.
Does someone make the connection that drop in longevity occurred because man started eating meat?
No, the drop in longevity was addressed by God to remove those flaws that contributed to the sin that brought about the flood. Rabbi Shane explained. We should explain that the men were very, very tall. The whole society back then, the Medrash again talks over there, exaggeration, but it says they used to walk from one end of the earth to the other in a few steps, and they would uproot cedars as they would walk, and the wild beasts were to them like fleas. Of course, it's an exaggeration. No human could be that tall. But it's trying to show you that there was a great stature that God blessed man with originally, and he should have used it for the good. He also had very long lives. So he can be evolved in wisdom to such a high degree. But he abused it. He used that great stature to dominate others. So those two things were reduced. The stature of man was reduced. That's why God had to, a second time, say that the fear of animals would be in man after the flood. But he already said this in Genesis. Why does he have to make that rule again? The reason Rabbi Chaim explained this is because since man's stature was greatly reduced, now there was a fear that the animals now overtake man. So God now had to, again, give that fear in the animal, a secondary fear in the animals of man. And the longevity was reduced, not because of eating meat, because that was a way to reduce another element. The immortality fantasy was greatly fed by man's longevity. So reducing his lifespan helped to cultivate more of a reduced ego. Okay. But man was allowed to eat meat. So that's why God said to Noah that all the animals are free to eat. But that does not disqualify the fact that if a person who is not Jewish wants to benefit from observing laws of kosher, he definitely can and will benefit from it. So there's no contradiction. So your first question was, I think is answered now, that also the second question too, meaning God tells Noah he can eat meat, and also later on in Deuteronomy, a Jew can give the non-kosher meat to his friend who's a Noahite. Because again, he's not commanded in keeping kosher. That's why he can give it to him. So why throw it out? Help your friend out. Your friend is not Jewish, so he's Noahite. He doesn't have the laws of kosher. You can give it to him. If he decides to keep kosher, that's his decision, and it's his benefit. So there's no problem. All right?
So, Rabbi, could I ask a question to Rivka?
Yes.
Please. I just want to find out, there are people who think that reference to eating meat, that maybe not to eat, to be vegetarian, is in line with what the Torah wants. In other words, when they discussed the time of the graves of lust, when the people were clamoring for the quail, and then after that, many people died after they ate the quail. So they're trying to make the connection that because they ate the quail, that's why people died, that they should not have eaten meat. They should have stayed with whatever they were eating, what God had provided at the time, the man, and not be complaining. Is there anything anywhere that says not to eat meat in that respect?
No. As a matter of fact, it's an obligation on the holidays to have meat and wine because that contributes to man's happiness. There's an actual verse that King David wrote, and he said that wine gladdens the heart of man and meat, not meat, sorry. That verse is talking about bread, that bread satiates. But meat is a command, and the Kohanim, the priests, are given, sacrifices to eat. So we see that, meat is something which is a pleasure, and it should be, controlled like any other pleasure, not overindulgence and not asceticism where a person just, goes to the other extreme. That's not what God said. God gave a balance in certain areas. Certain meats you can't have at all, and certain meats you can have only under certain conditions. So that theory that you're mentioning is not true. It's not based in Torah. It's an extreme, over-religious type of an approach, which is not the Torah's approach. And it's not good. Okay?
Thank you.
You're welcome. So, all right, so now, Doug, the two questions you first had are answered now, right? Do we understand that?
I hear the answers. I must admit that I'm going to have to absorb them a little bit because I'm not completely satisfied.
All right, well, again, the point is that you're questioning how could the Torah say in two different cases, consistently say that the Noahide should eat meat, and even non-kosher meat specifically. How can we say that the Noahide can eat the non-kosher meat, and yet this medrash over here seems to be praising a Noahide who abstained from it. That's the conflict here, right?
Yeah, and let me take that a step further. So, I might be able to even buy that from Sinai forward, because then at that point there is the concept of kosher meat. But between the time of Noah and the time of Sinai, there's no Torah, so there's Noah, and I'm curious to get your opinion on this, but one individual raised this reasoning. He said, there were some animals in the ark that were taken by twos and some by sevens, and that Noah sacrificed some of those by sevens after he got out, and since those are considered to be clean animals versus unclean, Noah should have figured out that since God only want the clean ones, that he should only eat the clean ones. And my response to that was, well, if that's the case, then why would God have made the statement, you can freely eat whatever you want? Because there's no indication between the time of Noah and the time of Sinai that there's any benefit to one animal versus another.
Right.
So then how could God turn around and reward someone, and I'm at this point picking on someone who lived during that time period.
Not that there's no benefit, but that there's no command. There was no command of kosher at that point. That does not necessarily mean that there was no benefit by restricting your diet.
How would someone have derived that there would be a benefit?
That's a separate question. Is it something which you can derive or not? I'm talking just in terms of the view, it's Rashi, that he brought on seven of the clean, so there's something to be learned over there. But that does not impose a command on Noah, although it may, and it should, teach a certain idea, though. There's a certain idea that has to be derived from the fact that certain animals are clean and certain are not. So what is that? Why would there be such a category of clean and non-clean animals if there's no law in terms of their eating them? Which is a question. I understand the question. But again, there was no command in terms of any type of kosher laws at that point.
Right.
Okay?
Okay.
Why there was clean and not clean animals in terms of bringing them onto the ark and so on, that's a separate question. And I'm sure there was a benefit to Noah in having that knowledge too. Let's address your questions. Again, the inconsistency, just to reiterate, is that the Torah is allowing Noah to eat any animal, and even after the Torah is given, the Torah is commanding the Jew to give the non-clean animals to the Gentile, to the Noahide. So you see clearly the Torah has no command, either before Sinai or after Sinai, regarding kosher laws for the Gentile. If that's the case, how could God make a statement in this Medrash that whoever did not eat pig, let him come and claim his reward? Why would we reward? I mean, there is no command for the Noahides to abstain from pig. Why should there now be the statement that whoever didn't eat of it should not get his reward? Right?
Right.
Okay, so to answer that, again, the answer is that although there is no command, there definitely is a benefit in observing it. Like the Jew, if the Noahide observed kosher, so why would he not benefit equally as a Jew who has to keep laws of kosher? The answer is, of course, he would benefit. He would benefit equally. We've said numerous times that there's no, God did not create Jew and Gentile. God created man and woman. Everybody comes from Adam and Eve. Everybody's equal, identically. The only difference is in terms of what practices a person takes on. You could have a Jew, and he's born to Jewish parents, but if he serves idolatry and he does the most wicked, the heinous crimes, He's corrupt in God's eyes, whereas a person is born to parents who are not Jewish, and he takes on the seven Noahide laws, and he lives properly, he's in a higher level, clearly. So there's no benefit being born to Jewish parents or non-Jewish parents. It all has to do with, I mean, perfection is not a birthright. Perfection is in terms of a person's choices. Now, so there's no problem. In terms of whether there's a command, there's no command for the Gentile to eat kosher. That's why Noah was allowed to eat every single animal, and that is why there's a command in Deuteronomy that the Jew who has meat, that let's say he accidentally ruined the slaughter of the meat and it didn't go properly, so now it's not kosher, but the meat is fine, so give it to your Noahide friend. He's allowed to eat that because he is not commanded. If he wants to observe it, that's fine. He can observe kosher 100%. So there's no problem there. Now the problem comes up in terms of this measure. So what does this mean in the future? God is going to make this statement. And he's going to say, whoever abstained from eating pigs, so let him come to claim his reward in the afterlife. Right? And then it said there that the number of the Gentiles came. Okay? So that's, and then God's response, his response is that you it's not enough that you ate your own world, but you want to also have the next world too? a funny statement. He just made an invitation. So God revamps his statement. He says, no, what I mean is that whoever did not partake of any type of restricted eating, not only pig, but all other species, and anything which was torn, and anything which is of the insect community, anything of a reptile, anybody like that, let them come. And then there was nobody except for the Jews. So now let's understand over here, and I'll give you my questions on this. Okay? If you want to just jot them down just to make sure we'll do them all. Okay, so number one, what is this announcement, this concept of an announcement? Right, if we take apart this whole statement of the rabbis, I mean, the rabbis, these were geniuses we're talking about, so we have to appreciate every element of this allegory, all right? So let's take apart this allegory. What are the elements? Well, one thing is that they're saying that there was some sort of announcement, quote-unquote announcement in the future. And let me just, Laura in Washington, how's the sound? Because Laura is joining us online, and she's got a new setup, so I want to just make sure the sound is good. So if you just let me know that the sound is still going well, that would be appreciated, Laura. Okay. Just type that on the screen. Okay, so number one is, what's this idea of an announcement, right? Why, and second question is, what is this, why is it taking place in the next world, the afterlife? How does the afterlife play a role over here? Why isn't the announcement on Earth? That's number two. Number three, why is the, okay, Laura, thanks. Okay, so why is the announcement dealing with pig? Well, it's a very arbitrary type of an announcement. And what's this idea of a second announcement? That after they came and they wanted to take both worlds, and God makes a statement, it's not enough that you got this world, you want the next world also? Well, God made the announcement. It's God's invitation. Okay? And the actual statement itself, he says, it's not enough that you ate your world, but you want to have the next world too. I mean, that idea, what do you mean? That you ate your world, that you consumed your world. What does he mean by that? All right, and then the final announcement, God revamps the statement. He says, no, this is what I mean. It's not that I'm announcing a reward for anybody who abstained from pig, but I'm announcing a reward for anybody of the other nations who abstained from all of the species of animals that are restricted to the Jew. And that includes also insects and reptiles. It also includes any animals that were not ritually slaughtered. And to that, there was nobody of the other nations. Only the Jews alone kept all of that. Okay. So, these are new questions now, right, Doug?
Okay.
So we have to understand the sense of this whole, this point. So, what I'd say is as follows, is that the fact that it's taking place in the next world means to say you can only have one or the other. Meaning God is now saying whoever abstained in the earthly existence, now a reward awaits you. Meaning, and what was the abstention? The abstention was from the lusts. That's why I think pig is used over here, because the appetite is a very strong desire. That's one of the most basic, appetite and the sexual. So the concept of announcement isn't God is actually speaking, he's announcing. It means to say that in the next world is where the reward for the abstention of the lusts is going to take place. That means to say that it's either or. If a person is involved in the lusts in this world, so then in as much as he's involved and his energy is going to that area, it removes him from being involved in the intellectual pursuits, the world of wisdom. You can't do both. The energy flows to a certain area, and it's used in a certain area. It's said by King David. David said that his sins are before him always. He always regretted. Yes, you could do repentance, and like Maimonides says, nothing stands before repentance. Anybody who wants to repent can repent fully, to the point that even that his sins are not even recalled anymore. That's what it says in chapter 18 in Ezekiel. Nonetheless, my friend Yossi Azos explained that Well, what was David, you know, King David, he had remorse about? Of course he could do repentance. So why was he remorseful about the sin? Because he said that he regretted the lost time when he was involved in anything that was not involved in wisdom. Because that can never be made up. Lost time cannot be made up. Okay, meaning to say that there was a certain amount of loss that you suffer if you went for those moments that the person was not involved in pursuing the truth. So that's what God is saying. He's saying in the world to come, that's when the reward will be paid for those who abstained and didn't give in to their desires, but they left, you know, they left off the desires. They lived a modest, controlled life. That doesn't mean they were ascetics. They lived their lives properly. They controlled the desires. They outletted them properly when there was a need. But they weren't immersed in the desires. Their intelligence was controlling them. They were not controlling their intelligence. I mean, they weren't guided by lust. Their intelligence was controlling when they were involved. So then, since they lived that way, and they controlled their lusts, they were able to engage more in the world of wisdom. And now, that's what it means that God will announce. Whoever had a control over his lusts in his earthly existence now will enjoy that reward in this world. Meaning now that you've spent so much time in pursuing wisdom, that elevates you, your soul so much more than when you finally reach the next world, you will have such a greater reward. And that's sort of speak like God saying, let those people come now and claim the reward. All right, so far so good?
Okay,
so now what happens is, so some of the Gentiles come and say, yes, we, because the first announcement was whoever was not involved in eating pig, all right? So eating a pig was the only announcement. So a number of the Noahites came and said, hey, we weren't involved, give us reward. So God's response is that not enough that you enjoy the physical world, but you want this world too? But what do you mean it's not enough that that you enjoy the physical world? They just said that we abstained completely our whole lives from pig. So they can't say that to God and expect to... They're not lying. A person can't lie to God. And God doesn't accuse them of lying. But his response is, no, that's not what I meant. I meant that whoever did not partake of any species, not only a pig, but whatever it was, whether it was the jackal or let's say the zebra, or whatever, or horse meat, whatever these animals are that are not kosher, pig is just the head category. It's just my reference point. But what I really mean, God is saying, is that whoever did not involve himself in eating any non-kosher species, including insects, including reptiles, including any animals that weren't ritually slaughtered, like they were hunted. So then, the major says, nobody except the Jews completely abstained from all of them. So there was nobody to come and claim the reward. So what does this mean? What this means, I believe, is that God is saying that the real reward is not a partial reduction. Meaning, okay, I'm going to give up pig, but I'll have everything else, which is not kosher. That's not the perfection God's looking for. And you're not going to have a claim on the reward in the next world if you merely just gave up one. Because God's system, in terms of the appetitive, is all or nothing. So if a person just says, oh, I won't have the swine, like if it's like a Jew saying it. The same thing. If a Jew says, I won't eat swine, but I'll eat everything else, which is not kosher. So he has no claim in terms of controlling his desires, because controlling the desires is if you do it according to God's method, not the human method. God said, here, let's say there's 100 species of animal and insects and animals that weren't ritually torn, but you only abstain from one of them, or even 50 of them, or even 99 of them. But if you gave in, then you violated even one area, so now you did not keep God's system as it should be. Therefore, the real perfection that is realized through 100% adherence to kosher laws, you can't obtain that real perfection. So that's what the whole conversation is. God is saying, whoever abstains from the whoever, follows the laws of the appetite, of kosher. Now, since you did that, you controlled your instinctual drives to such a point that you followed the laws of kosher completely your whole life, that had such a grand perfection upon you in terms of controlling your lusts, that gave you more energy than you put into all the wisdom. And now in the next world, you go to reap that reward. Because now, since you excelled so much further on Earth, because you were controlling your appetitive drive, and you didn't give in to it, therefore that energy was redirected towards your wisdom, towards an intellectual life, and searching at God, and love and fear of God. So because of that, you elevated yourself to such a higher plane on Earth, so therefore your next life in the next world is going to be that much greater. As if God was saying, come and get your reward, because you did that. But if a person only abstained from pig and everything else he violated, so he didn't do what God said. One thing is not what God said. He said keep away from 100. So that's why God revamps the announcement. And he tells, you see why he had to revamp it, is because those Gentiles are just looking for more. You have to. It's giving you an insight in terms of the nature of those Gentiles who are running for the reward. They're trying to have both. They want to have, and that's what God's critique is. He says, "You, it's not enough that you had this world, meaning you ate everything that was non-kosher. Of course, you weren't commanded to abstain, but you were involved in the lusts, and you just gave up one animal. So you want to have this world, and you also want to have the next world? No, that's what God is saying. What the rabbis, I mean, are saying by making this statement, is a criticism that the person doesn't realize that. You can't have both worlds. You can't be a person who is completely indulgent in all the appetites and all the most delicious, the savory foods and all the different species and lobster and crab and all everything and shrimp and everything you ever wanted was always free to eat. A person like that is too steeped in the instinctual, namely the appetitive, that his emotions weren't tempered enough to be redirected towards wisdom to a great degree. So if you had this physical world, you can't have the next world. If you abstain completely and control yourself properly from all these areas, that means every part of your day when it came to eating, it was your intellect always ruled. So then you were a person who trained yourself to remove the energy from going into the appetite, and now you must have had more energy for knowledge and for wisdom. Therefore, your next world, you'll be able to come and claim your reward. But it can't just be that you abstain from one thing. But there were those certain Gentiles who feel, no, that is. It's just, you know, they want to have it all. That's the critique. No, you can't have it all. It's either or. Okay, so that's what God's statement is here when he says, it's not enough if you had this world, you want the next world too? Right, so let's just stop here and see if you understand, if that's clear.
I think so. I mean, isn't that sort of a continuum of, I mean, let's say, just for sake of our argument, that there are 100 foods you shouldn't eat, that are 100 foods prohibited by, that are non-kosher. And so someone says, well, I'll be, you know, more religious by not eating pig. So there's 1 out of 100. Okay. Some other person says, well, I won't eat pig and I won't eat crab, but I'll do everything else. And you keep going up the line until somebody, you know, let's say a Gentile leaves off 99 of them, but, you know, for some reason there's a hankering for one. Isn't there just a continuum of you put more, the more you keep that commandment, the more energy you're putting in the intellectual, or is it more that even if you've done 99 but not 100, there's a qualitative big difference.
Exactly.
It's exactly. Not a continuum, it's a stair-step function, so to speak.
It's all or nothing. Meaning to say that intuitively you might think, well, I'm doing more, so there's more control. This is true. I can't deny that. I sense that also, but I'll give you another example. For example, a person keeps everything about Shabbos, but he breaks one law. Well, he's got to be killed. He did not keep Shabbos. Shabbos means keeping all... abstaining from all 39 forms of creative activity. He does everything, he abstains from everything, but he plants. Well, that's it. He is punished with death because he broke that one thing. He did not keep the Sabbath. A person's bringing a priest to the temple, is bringing the sacrifices, and he doesn't do one thing properly, but he does every one of the 100 other things properly. The animal's no good. You can't sacrifice him. Meaning to say that there is an absolute, there's an absolute requirement. There's a set of requirements in order to meet the goal. And you may have done the other things properly, but did you fulfill the objective? The objective wasn't met. So that's what God is saying over here, that the mere abstention from pig alone doesn't give the person the right to claim a reward, because he was still outletting himself corruptly in other areas. And it's not corrupt in the sense that it's a command, because he doesn't have the command. But if he really wants to have the true perfection that awaits a human being, any human being in the next world, then it has to be that he abstains from all the laws of kosher, just like the Jew has to abstain.
So in essence, I'm getting that this applies both to kosher, but to almost any other law as well. It's intended, the Midrash is intended to be universal in that regard.
Yes, it's true. That's proper.
And the idea being that you don't get partial credit for any halacha. You either kept it or you didn't in total.
Well, that, I don't think I go that far, because it could be in this area, in terms of the drives of the instinctual, they work differently than, let's say, the laws of Sukkah. Maybe in terms of keeping the holiday of Sukkot, so Noach definitely, I mean, you can't do it all. That's one of those few that you can't do. But there may be certain perfections in thinking about the Exodus and discussing the Exodus and building the Sukkah. There could be certain partial things there, because there it's not addressing an instinctual drive. So there could be benefits in each step, whereas in addressing an instinctual drive, so it could be all or nothing. I'll give you an example. If you get most of the cancer out of the body, you really haven't done anything. Because if it's there, it's going to infest again. Whereas, let's say a person exercises one muscle, his left arm, but not the right arm. So there's a benefit there, because now his left arm can lift up more in the future. So there's definitely a benefit there. So it depends on what part of the, just like the body, there's different ways we have to assess, is there a value in a partial improvement? Well, it depends on what we're talking about. So also psychologically and philosophically, we have to understand what aspect of the human being is being addressed. You see the difference?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, so it's a jump we can't make. We have to first look at what area we're talking about. Can we extrapolate and apply this to another area? We'll have to see. But the main point here is that, number one, the real reward is going to be the next world. That's why God makes the announcement in the next world. Number two, another primary point here is that it's in this area, the instincts, it's all or nothing. There's actually a statement of the rabbis regarding the sexual. And they say there's a small limb in man. And if he starves it, it becomes satiated. If he feeds it, it becomes hungry. That means to say that the more a person gives in to the sexual, the more of a craving it develops. The less he gives into it, the less of a desire there is, and the more he's removed from it, and the more he could put his energies into the intellectual pursuits. So we see that there's emotions work in a different way, perhaps, than the areas of, like, learning about Sukkah. There, you're not involved with base drives, right? And even within drives, it could be the lustful ones, the strongest ones, eating and the sexual, maybe, you know, worlds different than the drive to, you know, tattletale or to speak gossip or to steal. We have to look into each one and see the dynamics in order to make statements. And, you know, each one is going to be a broad study, too. All right, any questions or comments before we go further? We good?
I think so. Got to think about it a bit, but I think so.
Okay. Now.
It's fascinating. It really is.
Yeah. Okay. Now, what else? Just make sure we have all the points covered. As the fact that God's making an announcement, it means to say that that's the moment. In the next world is when it takes place. The reward is given. That's when the real reward for all of the following the laws takes place. It's the next world, not here. That's where the real benefit to the soul takes place. All right? Maybe we explain why it's talking about the pig, because it's really just representative of the base lusts. So pig is used. Sure refers to sexual as well. Okay. And also the phraseology in terms of the Hebrew word, but God says to the nations that respond and say, yes, we need pig, give us our reward. So God says, it's not sufficient that you ate your world here on earth. You want to have the next one too. So the actual wording is referring to the appetitive. You ate your world. You consumed this world. It's not enough that you were involved in the eating here, meaning the real what's pleasurable here. But you want to have the pleasure of the, you can't have the pleasure in both worlds. You can't. So ochel here means when God is saying ochel, eating. It's not enough that you ate. In this world, do you want to eat in the next world too? It's not enough that you had what was so appealing in this world, meaning the appetitive, but you also want to have what's appealing in the next world. You can't have what's appealing in the next world for the reasons we explained. Energy was not devoted properly to wisdom. Okay, and the next world has no, there's no sensuality. The body is here. It does not continue to the next world. The only thing that continues is the soul. Okay. But you see, an interesting thing is that, you know, they leap forward as soon as the opportunity, and they wanted to get the next world. They want to have both because they don't want to feel that they're missing out. But that means, you could say that what that means is this conversation that God is telling the Gentiles in the next world is that he's informing them that even if you kept the seven Noahide laws as you were commanded, and you didn't do anything more, it's still, that was not a system of perfection that can entitle you to the greatest world to come. What's going to entitle you to the greatest world to come as a Jew is partaking of their laws just like they did. And again, there's no difference in design between a child, whether he's, no matter what his parents are, religious-wise. Right? It all has to do with our actions. Birthright, there is no birthright of the next world. That's something we have to earn. Equal. Doesn't matter who we're born to.
Rabbi?
Yes.
So, it seems like there are two things. There's halacha, and then there's all the, I guess, philosophical stuff around character development and thinking clearly and that sort of thing. So, If I make an arbitrary contrast here between a Noahide who decides to take on all the commandments that he's allowed to do, and he keeps them, he doesn't work at all on his character or whatever, he just works on the commandments, versus a Noahide who only keeps the seven Noahide laws, does not take on any of the other commandments, but spends his time in learning and study and character development and character perfection. Do we have any indication from the rabbis what the preferred direction is or which one will help you the most?
You mean whether you just limit yourself to the commanded Noahide or you take on everything else?
Well, the difference between one who takes on commandments but does no work in the area of character development and learning other than to keep the commandments versus one who doesn't keep the commandments other than the seven Noahide laws but spends his time in learning and working in character development and thought and understanding.
So let me be clear. So what we have two Noahides. They're both involved in the commands, but only one is involved in character development?
We have two Noahides. They both keep the seven Noahide laws.
Right.
One goes beyond that and takes on all the other 613 that he's allowed to do.
Right.
Okay, but does no work in the area of character development and learning other than I just keep the commandments and learn enough so that I know how to do that.
Right, so that would be just like a Jew who does the same thing. He just goes through the actions without any perfection. He would be no better or worse off than a Jew who does the same thing. Meaning it's the system, the best system for both. Jew, you know, person born Jewish or person not born Jewish, the best for both individuals is that they both keep the 613. So that means if a Jew is born to, if a person is born to Jewish parents, he follows the entire Torah. If a person is born to non-Jewish parents, he converts and keeps the entire Torah. That is the best, because people are equal. Now, if you want to talk about if a person forfeits any character development, just goes through the, you know, the blank actions of the mitzvos, so then there's a severe loss that he has, because he's not really with the perfection. Let's say he's just doing the actions, doesn't understand why he's doing them, so he's going to suffer, whether he's a Jew or not. So really, how you're born, to what parents, is irrelevant in terms of your question. Your question is really who's going to be, is a person better off by doing more commands than less? Yes. And is he even better off than that by understanding all the character perfections seen by the patriarchs, you know, our Gentile patriarchs that founded Judaism? Of course, he'll even be better off, because now he's got the entire system. So,
right. The question I'm asking is, if you had to compare those two, let's say a person only has a certain amount of either time or energy or personal resources, whatever, to put into this.
Right.
He has to choose between taking on additional commandments or being more involved in learning and character development. Do we have any sense of which one, if I had to choose between the two, is more beneficial?
I don't know if you can really... It's a really hard hair to split here, because so many of the commands are about character development, you know, not gossiping, not stealing. It's inevitable that the person is going to benefit character-wise from that. So you can't really say he's going to do one or the other. It's going to come along. His mind is going to be thinking about, why am I doing this? Or he'll understand and he'll sense the benefit in not stealing, in not kidnapping, and not speaking bad. When he sees what, after doing so, that he hurts a person's feelings, he'll sense that and he'll understand there's something morally corrupt about, you know, speaking down about people. So you can't really separate the two. In terms of what the best prescription for a person is, for Gentile, for Noachide, again, I mean, the rabbis even say about a Jew, it doesn't matter whether you've done a lot or a little, I mean, in terms of your learning. There's only a certain amount of hours you have in the day and a certain amount of lifespan that you have. So God's not checking to see did you complete everything or not, because even there's another statement of the rabbis that the work is not upon you to complete. But you also do not have permission to abandon pursuing the system. So what you, the best and the right, you know, righteous person is going to be spending his time making his living, not trying to die rich, of course, because that's just too much time in work that's not necessary. So he'll work for what's necessary, and then he'll try to be involved as much as possible in taking on more commands, understanding the perfections in them, and going at a pace that he can go at according to his mind and his abilities, and to educate others, and to do that on a regular basis. And that is the best he can do. That's all he can do, and that God's going to look at as a real perfected individual. It doesn't matter if he started when he was 60 or he started when he was 6. It's the state that he's at. Does he right now approach life with his intelligence, or is he just trying to do all these rote activities and thinks there's some value in doing something without understanding it? And that's foolish. You have to take it on, understand it, know what the perfection is, share that knowledge with others, and continue and spend more time in the world of wisdom and ask the questions, and you know, to that is the path. And you know, approaching both, applying it to ourselves, to our character development. So it's hard to really give an exact, you know, and you can also ask the questions of which should we do first. Okay, that's, I mean, we have great teachers that, you know, formulated works. Maimonides, you know, his Mishnah Torah, he talks about what are the fundamentals. So we know what's fundamental, that's the core. We've got to start with those. And then in terms of love of God and understanding what that means, and, you know, before putting on, you know, before following the law of tzitzis, so it's more important to understand what's this concept of God? What is God? What can I know? What can't I know about him? So it's a lot to discuss on it, but the best thing is really to have like I discussed that approach. So it's a big question, but I think that in just having the broad strokes, that we have to understand the fundamentals, and we have to try to approach it, you know, approach the system where we see the benefit. And from this very measure that you brought up, which is such an important measure, that it really teaches that, the Noahide is going to have a claim to the next world when he's in the air of the appetite and instinctual, where he follows it just like the Jew. Because then that's really the system of perfection. And I told you, Rabbi Chait mentioned this as well. There was a story where Moses had seen an Egyptian beating up on his fellow Jews. So Moses looked around, he saw that there's nobody, and he killed the Egyptian, buried him in the sand, and he saved the Jew's life. But it wasn't, he looked around, so there's a midrashim on that too, and the rabbis say that he looked to see if there'd be any Egyptian that would issue from this Egyptian that would either repent or convert. So Rabbi Chait said, and he was quoting Jonathan Ben Uziel, that commentary. Rabbi Chait explained, you see, that in terms of the regular system, we can only look at a regular person and see his actions. We can't look to the future to see what the offspring will be. In terms of our assessment, is it just to kill him or not? We can't do that. We don't have the knowledge. We're not prophets. So all courts can do today is look at his actions. If he did something worthy of death, that's it. He has to be put to death. But Moses was the highest prophet. He was given great wisdom, and he was able to understand that there's a bigger picture over here. In terms of how God assesses the situation, he doesn't just look at this moment, but he looks at all future generations. What happens if this person is killed now? Will this now prevent somebody great from coming about? That's an assessment that only God can make. But he seems to be, he granted this to Moses at this moment. And Moses saw that by killing this person, he was not sacrificing anybody, because nobody in the future from this Egyptian was going to convert or repent. They're all going to be a lineage of people that were going to be corrupt, so therefore there was no loss in killing this one Egyptian. But Rabbi Chait's point was that you see that from the fact that it says nobody was going to convert, that means that's really the preferred thing for the Gentile, for the Noahide. That's really in consonance with this measure. So now we have two sources that point to the fact that a person who converts, a Gentile that knows how to convert, really will have the best eternity. And that should be something which is of a great concern, I would think. Because why just live the temporal existence here and sacrifice an eternity which could be so much grander by the abstention of all the laws of, the abstention of all of eating of all of the species, which is really the fulfillment, the complete fulfillment of the laws of kosher. But that's what the Midrash is saying. It's saying completely. I mean, it's clear. But again, there may be benefits in other areas that are incremental, like the analogy we gave. You exercise one arm and not the other, and you still do get some benefit. But if you excise 99% of the cancer cells and leave 1%, you've really not done much, because there still is that 1% of the cancer that can infest and kill a person. So that's akin to keeping all the laws of kosher. It's not enough that you just abstain from the pig, God says to the Gentile. You want to have the next world too? And all you did is you just gave up one species? No. In this area of the lusts, there has to be complete control over that area, just like the Jew has. Then you can really claim a greater reward. Because then you've really diverted all of your energy from the lusts and now freed them up, which now gives you so much more energy to put into wisdom. But if you're still satiating yourself with all these delicacies, so that energy is being tapped by the appetitive drive, and you're not allowing it to be engaged in the world of wisdom. So you're sacrificing your knowledge. You're sacrificing the perfection of the soul because of that. And that has to be clear.
indicate that the entire world will convert, but that everyone will eventually come to the knowledge of the one God.
Yeah, I mean, just like Jews will still have the laws of not stealing because it's necessary. Human nature is not going to change, but knowledge of God will fill the world like the oceans fill the sea, the prophet says, you know, in the times of the Messiah. It'll be much easier. It'll be easier to make a livelihood, so there'll be more time to be involved in wisdom, but people will still have lusts. People will still have desires.
Right. So, I mean, this is a huge question in the whole Noahide community is, well, should I convert? And it sounds like what you're saying is, well, the ultimate good for a Noahide is to convert and keep all the laws. And if all the Noahides convert, then doesn't that suggest that the ultimate end of all mankind is to convert? And yet that's not what we see.
Yeah, free will still exists. The Torah will never be nullified. Why? Because people aren't going to naturally do the good. They have to learn. That's why the Torah is always necessary. There's always going to be people that are going to be murdering. Because there are, that is in people, and certain situations will come up, and certain people will not control themselves, and that, you know, the laws about murder are necessary. If it's true that in the next world there's going to be a euphoria where everybody's like robots and programmed just to do the right thing all the time, you won't need the Torah anymore. So it's true. It doesn't say that, everybody's converting. It does say, though, that people will come, that the Gentiles will grab onto the Jew and say, teach me Torah. It does say that. Who's going to convert? I don't know. I don't know, but the bottom line is there is free will. And that doesn't mitigate the fact that the entire world is, the Navi doesn't say the entire world is going to convert. Again, I haven't done all of Navi, so I can't say is there a Navi that says this or not, but there is a prophet, there is a Navi. Navi means prophet, by the way, so I'm using Hebrew words accidentally here. The prophets do talk about the fact that the Gentiles will recognize it, and they will say that our forefathers bequeathed to us lies. And they'll realize that all the religions are foolish, except for Judaism. That will be realized in the future. How far will each individual Noahide go? That'll be up to his free will. Will a human being, regardless of who his parents are, benefit by keeping all the Torah? Yes, it doesn't matter whether you're born Jewish or not. Again, it's the same exact design. Right? Everybody's the same design. So there has to be, you must say that the perfection for any human being is to keep the entire Torah. I mean, it just makes sense. There's no reason to say that Noahide be better off by not converting. And listen, it is a lot to do. There are plenty of Jews, including myself, that born not observant, and you have to start taking it on, and you're doing it slowly, and eventually, you start seeing the wisdom behind it propels you, and you just can't see. Not doing it. You can't see, not keeping the entire system. And you're not doing the entire system every single moment, every single day. There's moments for this, there's moments for that. So laws of kosher only apply while you're eating, which is just an hour or so a day, whatever it is that we spend. And laws of the holidays once a year, and laws of this. So I know that sometimes it seems overwhelming. Wow, it's 613, and that's not including all the rabbinic laws that there are thousands of. But as, I just moved into a new location. So now, the laws of mezuzah now apply to me, which did apply for the past 15 some odd years. So, because now there's laws we have to investigate. And we opened up the Shulchan Aruch yesterday, and a couple of my friends and I went through the area, and it was very enjoyable to see new ideas. Where do I put a mezuzah if my doorway is not rectangular, but it has a arch that's a semicircle on the top? Does that affect where the positioning of the mezuzah? If so, why? What's the theory? And we came up with some newer insights that, because of the move, it just brought about questions and very interesting ideas. It was a real enjoyment. So, the performance, again, is some days is more, some days is less. Again, the greatest command we know, that the Gemara tells us, the Talmud tells us, is the study of the Torah. That is the greatest command, is the actual study. So, and we're doing this for years together. So it's not going to be a big change. If you're Gentile, you know, if you convert, so your days are still going to be spent the same in terms of the study. Most of your 6 days out of the week, again, you're going to be working and study when you can, and then you may start saying a blessing. But I know at this point you already told me that you're involved in blessings. And then there is the Sabbath, of course. But that's going to be a benefit by not doing work on the Sabbath, because now it forces us to be involved in study to even higher degree, because we have to withdraw from any creative work. No plowing, no work, no driving. And even longer discussions at your table at Shabbos with your sons and the friends that come over. And then attending the Torah readings and then discussing that. And then there's the nice get-togethers. There's also all the ancillary benefits of the community type of events. There's so much more. There's unity, and because of the gatherings, you know, daily in the temple, and the morning prayers, and also the obligation to keep sending more laws. It propels us to investigate those laws, and it even forces us to learn more. So it's only going to be more of an enjoyable thing for what you're doing already. And I'm not trying to compromise or mitigate the fact that there is more to do. But for the most part, again, study is the greatest command, and that's what has to come first. And that insight is just going to give more enjoyment and more appreciation for the Creator, which is really what we're here for. That's why he gave each human being a soul, an intelligence. We'll have to talk about it more, but I just want to share with you my sentiments on that.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Listen, but we're close friends, you know. So, one friend wants the best for his friend. So, and I was really, I remember when Rabbi Chait had said that statement that you see from there by that incident with Moses killing the Egyptian, but he did it only after he saw that there would be nobody would convert. That, and he showed from there that you see that that really is the best thing. It just makes sense. You know, you can't say it enough. Human being is human being. Babies are all identical at birth. It's true, some people are taller or shorter. Some people have better memories than others. But in terms of everybody's got heart and lungs and the circulatory system. Also, everybody's got the instincts and the drives and the soul. And what's going to benefit one is going to benefit the other. No discrepancy. Capiche?
Okay.
that's my extent of the Italian. I think that's my full extent of Italian right there.
That was very interesting.
Yeah. All right. Any questions? Any comments? And definitely go back to Jack. I'll put the class online so Jack can take a listen to this, since he was the one that instigated this whole thing.
Yeah, I'll have to see if I can write it back with put some of these ideas on paper.
I'd be good to cite that the class on the No-Hide Nations blog.
Yeah, we can do that too.
Yeah, I'll put the link up shortly after we get offline, and I'll put it under the audio section so you can see the exact link.
Okay. All right.
All right, we're good.
Thank you very much, and welcome to your new home.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, I had nothing to do with it, but I'm glad you found a place that's working well for you.
Yeah, thank God.
Is it in a completely different location?
No, just literally a block away.
Oh.
So it's much more consumer friendly and less expenses, which is good. You know, this economy, you got to really work on that.
Yeah.
So I really lucked out.
Very good.
All right, so we're going to continue. I guess we're up to 319, I believe, is where we are in Cohelis. And today wasn't really a deviation because it's actually a commentary on Cohelis. Interesting. So, interesting why it was brought in here. Maybe I'll take a little further. But
I'm not sure I see the connection to Cohelis.
Yeah, I'll have to take a look and see why it's put right here. But it was a pretty good translation that Jack had, which is good. It says something good about that book.
Oh, very good.
Okay, let me see. Laura, thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed the discussion. Everybody else, so we'll continue next week. We'll pick up same time, 11:15. And we will, 3:19 we'll be up to. All right? And again, any questions or anything during the week, you know, feel free to email.
Okay, thanks very much.
Okay, everybody, have a great day.
Be well, thank you.
Yep, have a good week.
You too, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.